3, 2, 1. Okay, so let's start. Starting in 3, 2, 1. Look at the camera, be natural, then. Hello and welcome to the Gatewatch. I am your host, Norman Sanzo, and joining me today is Wilson.
Hi, Norman.
So, you're probably wondering how things going and whatnot. And yeah, since it's been a week after Caught 21's release, a lot of people have opened packs, a lot of people have gotten a lot of good cards. And I personally got a Jace, so that's awesome. What about you?
I got a Borderless Ugin and also a Showcase Art Foil Liliana.
The Ugin is interesting.
Yes, but it's not foil, so I'm selling it.
I personally have two Ugins, so if I do get another one, I might be selling it unless it's the Borderless version or the Alter. The Borderless is the Alter Art, right?
Yeah, the Borderless is the Alter Art. There's no Showcase for Ugin. Apparently, that's sad.
So I might... No, there is, right? I think?
No, there is not.
No, okay. But anywho, putting that aside, so right now, there is a lot of cards in the set that are overlooked because they're commons and uncommons and they're considered to be not as good as the others. So I personally have picked 5 cards that I think that are good in Commander that people should consider putting it in. And Wilson, what about you? How many cards did you pick?
I picked around 5 to 7 cards, but most of them are rares or mythics. Because to be honest, I'm not really keen on the commons and uncommons for EDH.
Okay. So basically, I'm going the opposite of you then, because to me, having a lot of rares and mythics is a bit overrated because you overlook certain cards in the uncommon piles. So let's get right into it. So my first card would be Angelic Ascension. It is a 1 and a white instant that says exile target creature or planeswalker. Its controller creates a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. So to me, this is a really good removal for either yourself or your opponent, because it's a 2-cost, it's a 2-drop card that allows you to, well, avoid huge damage.
Yeah, that's true. And in response, you can do it in response since it's an instant. And your opponent, let's say there's a Kozilek that's attacking you, you can use the Angelic Ascension to neutralize that Kozilek's attack, and your opponent gets a 4/4 that can't directly attack you right now.
True, and also it's one of those scenarios where it gets over things that has indestructible. So if you're facing a Temur Sabertooth, so you put this one or you cast this and you target the Sabertooth, it's gone. And it gets replaced with a 4/4 angel. That's the only negative side to it. So do you think this card is EDH viable?
Yeah, it's EDH viable. Like, there's Path to Exile, there's Sword to Plowshares, there's so many exile cards that we can use. And Angelic Ascension is just a new type of exile effect that we actually really need in EDH.
All right. And if I'm not mistaken, white doesn't really have a lot of removals like this. If I'm not mistaken, there's Generous Gift or Greater Gift, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's only destroy. But if you want exile effects, there are a lot, but they are all enchantment based, and they can come back if that enchantment is destroyed.
Yes, true.
Usually,
like we mentioned before, Sword to Plowshare, and also what's the other one again?
Path to Exile.
Yeah, Path to Exile. Those two are one drops that are really good. Well, if you're talking about negatives, one gives opponent land, one gives opponent life. In all honesty, life doesn't really matter because it's just a, what you call this?
It's just a resource for them.
Yep, resource. But if you give land, that's but it doesn't really matter. So what's your pick?
Okay, so my first pick is Fiery Emancipation. Mm-hmm. And if a source you control deals damage to target permanent or player, triple that damage.
Oh.
So I like this card for a few reasons. First off, it multiplies damage. That's a big plus in red. We have a lot that multiplies damage. like Dictate of the Twin Gods. We have Torbrand, although it's a plus two. I like cards that give you additional damage because I want to kill my opponents quickly.
Yeah, that's true because I think last time I created a Clotis deck, was it?
Clotis, yes.
Clotis deck. And the idea for that deck was to just get a lot of damage multipliers from Dictate of the Twin Gods, that dwarf, was it?
The Torbrand.
And then there's this
Jaya
Worm. I forgot the name, but
okay.
The idea for that deck was call this creature out, create us this 2 damage, but since Dictate is there, it doubles it, so it deals 4 damage to every opponent and so on. And that there was kind of my deal, and it made games rather interesting. The unfortunate side with Dictate of the Twin Gods is
that you take the damage as well.
Yeah, but it makes the game faster.
Yeah, I like fast games, meaning I can finish a game and go for the next one. So what's your second pick, Norman?
My second pick has been a meme with some of my friends. And my second pick is Discontinuity.
So this is going to be discontinued.
So anyway, this card is a 3/3 blue for an instant that says as long as it's your turn, this spell costs
4 less. Yes. Two and two blue less to cast.
Yes, and end the turn. That's all. Exile all spells and abilities from the stack, including discard. The player who turn it is discard down to their maximum hand size. Damage wears off. And this turn and until end of turn effect ends. So when I look at this card, I thought it was like, this is similar to Sundial of the Infinite, where you pay 2 and tap
it
just
is.
To end the turn.
No, it's pay 1 and tap. But Sundial's restriction is that you can't activate it during your opponent's turn. Mm-hmm. While Discontinuity allows you to activate, albeit a higher cost, on your opponent's turn. So I would say that Discontinuity is a very good card so that when your opponent is attacking you for lethal, you can just end the turn. And his permanent stay tapped. You end your you end his turn. It goes to maybe your turn, and you can just kill him for, I don't know, maybe you have a big board or something.
True. But this also this card also does a lot of shenanigans because here's the thing. When we have when somebody goes off on a combo, let's just say that person is going off on an infinite.
Yes.
Like they're trying to go infinite with something, they're going with whatever it is, let's just say infinite. You can activate this card and just end the turn. And that guy will just be hanging there with nothing. And also, this goes over things that want creatures to come back. Like, let's just say if they exile their board and on the end turn they come back, if you do this, those things doesn't come back.
Right? They do.
They do?
They do. Until end of turn. Yes. No, they do not come back.
Yeah.
Yes, they do not come back.
So you can do those kind of shenanigans where people will be afraid to play stuff, play big crazy spells because you got no idea if that person has a discontinuity in his hand or not. And yeah, it's just another thing for a counter spell because me and my friend talk about, what happened if we do this? Oh, just counter it. Yeah, that'll be the way he has this or he has that. Counter it. But yes. Now we can just say, end the turn.
Yeah, and another benefit for this of this continuity is that if your opponent is playing a card with Storm, if you use this continuity after the Storm spell is on the stack and however many copies is copied, you can instantly use this continuity to exile all the spells on the stack. And I think that's a very big benefit in CEDH, not just EDH. CEDH wants to win really quickly. And although that card is much, much more expensive, it's still a good card.
True. But here's the thing. Does casting discontinuity, can somebody counter it?
Yes, they can, because it, unless you have something that says that spells you control cannot be countered, it can be countered.
Mm, so basically, it's not the end-all be-all, but still, it is a very interesting card, because things that have... Well, here's a good example. Like, Wilson mentioned he has a Saheeli...
Right.
What was it again?
Saheeli... The Gifted.
Yeah. So, she ulties. You have a lot of copies of whatever's on your board.
Oh, no.
So, just imagine this. You have Mycosynthetis. You ulti her. You get a lot of copies of your... Well, basically, everything on board. And then... On the end turn, you have to exile them, right? Or sacrifice them?
No, they exile.
Okay, you have to exile them. And you cast Discontinuity. They are still on board. You have double of everything. Your mana ramps, your lands, your creatures, except for the legendaries. But still, the point is, you have a lot of resource to go around. And also a lot of clutter on the table.
Yeah, it would be so hard for you to keep track of everything. But... it is a good combo for Saheeli and Discontinuity. There are so many combos for Discontinuity in the format, not just EDH, but for also Standard, for Modern, and even Legacy, if I am reading the directives correctly. Like, let's say, everyone loves Uro. Well, a lot of people hate it, but everyone loves Uro, can play Uro. Maybe they play a land, and then they cast Discontinuity, making your Uro not be sacrificed.
True. And also, this stops a lot of opponents from going off.
If you have the mana.
Yeah. I mean, this is going around in a big circle, but the point is, Discontinuity is a really good card that should be considered putting in any black that runs blue. I won't say that you must, but it can be considered.
It really depends on the deck. If you have a lot of cards that says beginning of the end step, then yeah, maybe I would say put in all decks that have that.
True, but for me, I think of it as a countermeasure for stopping opponents. Like, let's say that their creatures can't be countered, or let's just say they can't be countered at all.
Yeah.
So using this, we'll just stop them right there and there.
It's almost the same as Fluster Storm. Yeah, that's been reprinted in Modern Horizons, but it's we can see. We'll see when we play some games with it.
True. So what's your next card?
So my next card is a card that is a card that I personally like even more than the Fiery Emancipation, and that is Veto, Thorn of the Dust Rose. So Veto is two and a black, and it says, whenever you gain life, target opponent loses that much life. And you may pay 3 and 2 black to give your creatures lifelink until the end of turn. And it's a 1/3. So I like this card because it says whenever you gain life and that target opponent loses that much life.
So basically, it's a Sanguine Bond then?
Yes, it is a Sanguine Bond. And even better, it makes, let's say you're attacking your opponent with a lifelink creature, let's say 2/2. And your opponent takes 2, you gain back the life of 2. And then Veto triggers, and it makes your opponent lose another 2. It essentially allows your opponent to lose double the life total, while you gain life. So I like Veto in certain decks. I might play Veto in a Vampire deck, or let's say Elendra. Or maybe something, just play as a commander himself, because there are so many effects like Extort. There are so many vampires in black that have lifelink, and Veto gives lifelink. So what's your thought on?
Because I used to run a Oloro deck, and the whole concept for that one is a lot of, what you call this, life gains through whatever means necessary. So when I used to play it, I used the combo of Sanguine Bond and Exquisite Blood. And also, to gain life, I use cards like Whip of Erebos or any cards that force opponents to lose 2 life just by drawing cards. I'm always again, Scrying the Bones, something like that?
I do not remember.
It's a lot of those cards that do those kind of shenanigans.
Okay.
So with this is rather interesting, because I can have a sanguine bond at 3 costs.
That's true. That's true. Sanguine, one of the reasons sanguine bond is expensive, well, not expensive, is the combo is expensive, is because both of them cost 5 mana.
Yeah, 5/5, making it a total of 10 mana to go about. So yeah, those are some of the difficulties for that combo.
Yes, but now that we have Veto, Veto allows you to have to discount that combo to around 8 mana.
True.
So I would put Veto decks in any life gain deck. Let's say even if you're not playing vampires, you can put it in a Orzhov life gain, whatever.
True. I mean, it's very versatile. Like, the low cost doesn't make it a hindrance, and the pay 5 to give all your creatures life link until the end of turn is okay.
Yeah. So I think Veto can be its own commander, but we'll see how it goes. So what's your next pick, Norman?
So my next pick will be another black card, and that is Grasp of Darkness. And it is a 2/black for an instant. Target creature gets -4/-4 until end of turn. So it doesn't... Okay, most of my cards doesn't sound fancy, but it does the job. And 2/black for a -4/-4 is really good. Some of the cards that are coming at you probably are, 3/4, 3/5, or maybe 4/5, so on. So casting this card will just mitigate the damage to 0. You don't take any. So you're all good. And blocking will be much more easier. And since it's -4/-4, it bypasses any indestructibles. Oh, sorry, not indestructible.
It bypasses indestructible.
Yeah, sorry, bypass indestructible. So yeah, it does the job. So
yeah. Yeah, I would say Grasp of Darkness is a good pick. If it were a monocolor deck, it would be a 2-color or 3-color deck. There will be sometimes where you can't cast it, but, well, it's EDH. Mm-hmm. You're not going to draw it on the second turn, cast it on the second turn. So, yeah, I think it's a good pick as well. Grasp of Darkness, good reprint in this set as well.
Oh, it's not an original? It's a reprint?
It's a reprint.
Oh.
It's been reprinted in... Shadows, or...
It was originally in Scar of Mirrodin, and it was reprinted in Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yeah, yes, okay. Oath. So yeah, I think it's a very good reprint, and can be included in a lot of decks. And for new players, I would suggest you go and get it right now, since it's reprinted.
It's stupid cheap.
Yeah, it's stupid cheap, since it's a... common?
Yeah, it's a common for 2 blacks.
Yeah, it's a common, so yeah. It's easy to get.
So what
about yours? Well, so my next one is a very good goblin, but it's not the goblin you're thinking of. It's called Brash Taunter.
Oh, that one.
It's 4 and a red for a 1/1 indestructible goblin, and whenever it's dealt damage, it deals that much damage to target opponent. And it has an activated ability of 2 and a red, tap it, and Brass Hunter fights another target creature. And it doesn't say anyone. It can be your own creature, it can be your opponent's creature. So I like this card because you know EDH loves to play big creatures. I have seen Kozilex, I have seen Ulamogs, Emrakuls, I've seen like 36s. I do not like them, but I do now since I have Brash Taunter.
Yeah, Brash Taunter here is a very interesting card. The way that it goes around dealing with stuff is really interesting. It's indestructible, it's a 1/1 goblin, and whatever damage goes to it goes back to
your opponent.
So it is very fun. And here's the thing, it doesn't need to do combat damage. You could do something like Star of Extinction, dealing it 20 damage, where it gives it to another person. So, yay.
Also, it's also very good political tool, mm-hmm. Where if your opponent has a big creature, but he knows if he swings at you, it will deal the damage back to him, you can tell him, maybe you swing at me and I will do the damage to someone else. Then he might comply, hit you, and then the damage is dealt to someone else.
That's true, that's true.
And also, there's a disadvantage for this card is if your opponent has a creature with trample.
Yes.
Yes, it is going to just deal one damage because one damage is going to be only dealt to that goblin and you're going to take the rest of the damage.
Yes. So there's something to catch because at first I didn't really notice it, but yeah, it says whenever
it's dealt damage.
Yeah,
it's dealt damage. But if it has trample, then it's only dealt lethal damage, which is only one. So that's a disadvantage of the card, but it's a very good political tool. Mm-hmm. And it can kill people maybe two shots.
True.
If there's a 20-20 on the board.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. So what's your next pick, Norman?
So my next pick will be Villagers' Rights. It is a black instant that says, as an additional to cast this card, straight this spell, sacrifice a creature, draw two cards. So it is a one...
It's in black, right?
Yep.
Card draw in black. Wow.
Pay one, draw two cards. That is value. The only negative side is you have to sacrifice the creature.
But there are so many cards in black that wants it to die.
True.
They're suicidal.
Yeah, true. So here's the thing. For black, it's no issue because there's a lot of things going around it that wants creatures to die.
Undying
persists, or reassembling skeleton where if it is in the grave, you can call it back by paying two. I mean, there's a lot of
cards that can come back.
And since you're playing in Commander, it doesn't really matter if you lose one creature.
Yeah, that's true.
So, drawing two in black. Okay, granted, if you're playing in colors that doesn't have blue, so it is a benefit, but if you're playing in blue, this card is a bit so-so, right?
Yeah, you, if you're playing blue, you have better options, but yeah, don't play this if you're playing blue.
True. And, the normal price is not expensive, but for the foil version, it is worth something.
Well, yeah, because of the art. Right. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the art, because... Yeah.
But still, it is a good looking card and it's really good in Commander. Like, I personally would use this one if I were to build a mono black deck.
Yeah, true. There are so many mono black decks these days. Skitterex, the Black Dragon, even Sir. Was it Sir Conrad?
Yeah,
Sir Conrad.
What about Vito?
Yeah, I would play Vito in that.
So, anyway, what is it again? Fourth?
My next pick is going to be Chromatic Ori. Everyone knows the Ori. Everyone knows Chromatic Ori, which it says 7 mana. But you may use mana as though it were of any color, and you may tap it to make 5 colorless mana. But with the static ability of Chromatic Ori, it can be any type of mana you want. And you may pay 5 and tap it to draw 5 cards. Is it draw 5 or is it draw 7? Yeah. No, you draw a card for each color among permanents you control.
So basically, if you're playing in a 5-color commander, you draw 5 then?
Yeah, if you have an Earth Dragon, you draw 5. If you have a Sphinx of the Guild pack, you draw 5. If you have Joda, you only draw 3.
Yes, because it's in the CMC.
Yes. Yeah. So, I like this card for a variety of reasons. First off, you may spend mana as though it were any color. That is very strong. It's not like Chromatic Lantern, which says your lands tap for any mana.
Yep.
That's a bit different because this allows you to combo off with Kruphix, God of Horizons.
Yeah.
Where if... Kruphix says each time you tap mana and it's unused, you get the mana as in the colorless one. But with Chromatic Ori, it can be any type of mana you want.
Yeah, and this helps a lot with a lot of Mana Rocks decks that uses a lot of colorless mana. So basically,
Your Soul Ring now taps for any 2 mana now.
Of any color.
Yeah.
So that would be very fascinating. And Archive? No, what was the robot again?
Sad Robot?
No, not Sad Robot, the other one. The
Hedron Archive?
Six and Tap 3.
Six and Tap 3?
Yeah. 6 and tap for 3. I forgot. Like,
it's Dreamstone Hedron.
Yeah, the Dreamstone Hedron. Like, you get 3 of any color. So that is interesting. Like, this here helps, I won't say bypass, but
it helps with color restrictions, yeah. To be honest. But the cost is quite high. In Commander, however, in Commander you can cheat out. There's so many ways to cheat it out.
I think we talked about it in last episode where 7 is huge, but since you get a 5 rebate later on, it's not that painful.
Yeah, you're essentially just using 2 mana to make to have a mana rock.
Yeah, for 5 that you can use instantly. So
yeah, true. So what's your next pick, Norman?
My next pick is it's a red card, and it's Unleash Fury for 1 and red, instant, double the power of target creature until end of turn.
Ooh.
I'm thinking, most of my cards are just like cheap budgeted cards, but this here has a lot of impact in the game, because when you have your creatures, let's just say you're using your commander has double strike, and you're playing Xu Yun, or if you're playing something like Feather, so those cards, like, if you can get them to 11,
and you win the game.
Yeah, like, you just instantly use the game. And especially in Feather, where it targets, you can use this again and again. Just get Feather to 11, cast this spell, targeting it, and smack for lethal.
Yeah, that's true. And I would probably use this in Eldrazi. Next, if there is an Eldrazi, because that's Eldrazi's are so big right now. But this card is so good in Azada deck, where if you target it, it copies it for each creature you control.
Yeah, yeah. Is it a 0? No.
No, it's Zada.
Zada, yeah, okay. I remember her, the goblin. That one's good.
Yeah, Hedron got Grinder. So I think Zada is a good fit for that commander.
Yeah, no.
For that card.
Here's the thing. You could use it in a Krenko Mock Boss deck where you get a bunch of token creatures out. And then you have Zada. It's pretty silly, but just imagine. Your 1-1 goblins swinging for double, but you have 100 of them.
Oh.
Or maybe 20 of them. Still. 22 goblins would still be very painful.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so my next card is going to be Grim Tutor.
Ah, yes.
Grim Tutor, the 1 and 2 black sorcery, which allows you to search your card for a library. Put that into your hand, and then you shuffle your deck, although you have to lose 3 life. It's strong. The reason why I put this card in here is because it is finally reprinted since 1999. It's been in the starter deck from 1999, and I do not know why they did not reprint this earlier, if they reprinted Demonic Tutor earlier, because this is just a worse version of Demonic Tutor.
I think the 1 and 2 blacks, sorcery speed card is not that, how do you say, memorable as Demonic Tutor, because Demonic Tutor is 2, right?
Yeah, 2. But also, although it's still a sorcery, Vampiric Tutor is the one that's instant.
Yeah, but Vampiric Tutor is really expensive. But yes, I'll just say this. Losing 3 life just to Tutor is not bad rate. You have what?
Diabolic, life is a resource.
Yeah, Diabolic Intent, was it? No, Diabolic.
Diabolic in Diabolic Tutor.
Diabolic, what was the full cost one? I don't have it in front of me right now.
Diabolic Tutor.
Diabolic Tutor.
Search your library for a card, put that card into your hand, then shuffle your library. Yeah. The 4 mana cost.
So for 4 mana, it's a bit farther away. Like, you have to wait 1 turn away just to tutor something. But with Grim Tutor, you get to do it on turn 3. Lose 3 life, which is not that bad. Like, you could get something that helps you gain life, like something, okay, a Whip of Erebos. On turn 4, you can cast the whip out and then swing for damage just to regain back 3 life. It doesn't really matter.
But Grim Tutor is a tutor, meaning that in the army of tutors in a black deck, you could have vampiric tutor, demonic tutor, grim tutor, demonic tutor, diabolic tutor, and even the tutor, diabolic intent, is it?
Diabolic intent, which is
the sacrifice.
One and black, as addition to cast this spell, sacrifice a creature, and just tutor it, tutor.
Yeah, so I would play it in so many cards, make so many decks, even Beseech the Queen.
Mm.
Because if you're a combo deck, you need a lot of tutors.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, and I play combo a lot.
Yeah. But you know, honestly, it's, with all the tutors that we mentioned there, like, is Grim Tutor worth putting in the deck? The answer is yes.
Yes, it you is.
Could remove
any other card.
Yeah, you could remove Diabolic Tutor because it's a 4. And if you can tutor earlier, that's much better.
Yeah, but tutors are going to just take a small percentage of your deck. So I would say, to hell with the other cards. Just put in all your tutors so that you can find your combo pieces as quickly as you can.
True, but there's another way to do it, which is massive draws. But that's another story for a different day.
Massive draws, no. Okay, so what's your last card, okay, Norman?
So my last card would be a green card, Thrashing Brontodon.
Oh, that.
For a 1 and a 2 green, Dinosaur, 3/4, and it has pay 1, sacrifice Thrashing Brontodon, destroy target artifact or enchantment. So, here's the thing. For me, certain spot removals are very important. Like, we've been talking about a lot of creature removals, tutoring and whatnot, but in Commander, one of the few things that people seem to forget or seem to not pay attention to is enchantment removals, artifact removals. And this dinosaur here is not bad because, well, you have 3, you have a 3/4 blocker, so that's awesome. And the activation cost is just 1. So,
true.
Yeah, you could just hold it there for, well,
Blockers, since it's a
3/4 or threats, who knows? And yeah, if somebody plays an enchantment that doesn't allow you to do stuff, for example, what do you call this? Blind Obedience, that's one annoying card. What's the blue card you played where all artifact creatures and land comes in play type?
Oh, Frozen Eater.
Yep, there's another annoying one. Or
if your opponent plays on Omniscience.
Yeah, Omniscience. And then there's also what? Let's see. There's this what? Black? No, I forgot. There's neat.
Dictate of Erebos.
That's one thing, but Smoldering Ties. So that is another annoying card that people would love to destroy.
Yes, everyone will destroy Smoldering Ties.
Yeah, but if they don't have a removal, they can't.
Yeah, true. Or you can just counter it.
Yeah, it does arrive in models.
Yeah, who knows?
But personally, I do like it. I do put it in most of my green decks. And in all honesty, green has answers for enchantments and artifacts, but having a little bit more would be nice.
Yeah, and it's just a creature, so you can swing it.
Yeah. Also, it works well with that one green enchantment where every time you cast a creature with 3 or greater, you draw a card. I forgot.
And are you talking about the new one, Garruk's Horde?
An older one, but Garruk's Horde works well too.
Yeah. If it's an older one, I can't remember, but I remember Garruk's Horde.
Yeah, so basically comes in, you draw a card, so works, we win. Yeah. So what's your last one?
Well, my last one, Grim Tutor was my last one, but I thought of another one. Give me a second, let me look for the effect.
I'm just looking here, and your Grim Tutor is already at 5.
Yeah, my last one is a Double Vision. So Double Vision is an enchantment for 3 and 2 red. It says whenever you cast your first instant or sorcery spell each turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So Double Vision's ability pairs really well with the newer commander called Calamax. Yes. So that one allows you to essentially, you don't really need to tap Calamax to copy your spell. But yeah, tapping Calamax would be a good option. But it allows you to copy, let's say, Windfall, making your opponents discard all their cards and then you keep drawing them. Or maybe you don't have enough land, so you use double vision to cultivate to look for more lands and put it onto the battlefield.
But the caveat is that it only works on the first, it's not a sorcery spell you cast.
Yeah, that's true. But it's good enough. Each turn though, so if your opponent is casting something and you may cast instants on your opponent's turn as well.
True. And yeah, like if you do have let's say a lightning bolt, it deals 6 damage instead of 3.
Yeah, true. And there's a lot of ways to exploit double vision because there are so many powerful instants and sorceries in the format. Let's say you can even use a fireball and it could copy and you may choose another opponent. Let's say you have 20 mana, no, 10, 15 mana and you're casting it for X15. Double vision can copy it and you may choose one of your other opponents to hit the fireball with.
Yeah, true. Also, it says it copies the first instant sorcery spell you cast. So if you cast, what you call this?
Explosion?
No, not really. If you cast something like a sorcery spell that doubles the next spell you cast, I forgot, it's in Dominaria.
Like Swarm Intelligence? No, wait.
No, it's a 5 red card spell, sorcery. If I'm not mistaken, you cast it, and then the next spell you cast, you double cast. It.
Oh, Reverted Reverberation.
Yes, that.
But that is in a course of 2020.
Oh, remember. But still, you cast that card, double vision triggers, meaning you double the activation of...
Meaning you quadruple it.
Yes. Then now, you cast stuff that burns or draws or whatever. That's true. So you can do it 4 times.
Yeah, that is way stronger than I thought.
Yep. But it's at a 5, so there's a lot of shenanigans you could go into when you talk about casting double. So with Kalamax on board, you can do that, tap it, and then like copy it again. So like there's a lot of shenanigans you can do.
Yeah, that's true. So now that we have reached to this session, maybe we can go on to our next section.
Yep, let's go to the next section or the next topic. And we're still building the flow of the show, but I like to call combo of the day. Yeah. So with one card that I saw in Corset 21 is called Speaker of the Heavens. So what Speaker of the Heaven does is that, give me a second, it is a
one mana white
human cleric, has vigilance, lifelink, and has the ability of tap, create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. Activate this ability only if you have at least 7 or more than your starting life total and only any time you can cast a sorcery. So at first, when you look at this card, it's not that big of a deal.
It's even, I would say it's very, very underpowered.
True. But when you combo it off, the only caveat is that you need to be at 7 lives, which is not that hard in Commander.
And depends on the deck you build as well.
I mean, if you're putting him in, it's already obvious that you're going to get 7 lives. But anyway, the combo is having that card with Intruder Alarm. So Intruder Alarm is...
Intruder Alarm is 2 and 1 blue. Mm-hmm. And it says whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you may untap your creatures. But you can't untap your creatures during the untap step.
Yes.
And it's not just yours, it's your opponent's as well.
So it's a global effect.
Yep.
But here's the thing. Using that with Speaker, you tap it, you create a 4/4 angel. You untap Speaker, you tap it again. So that's the loop there. Which is interesting, but what can you do? Well, essentially, you could combo it off with...
Something that gains you life whenever a creature enters the battlefield. Yep.
Impact Tremor or the God
of...
Forfrost.
Forfrost, yes.
So you can combo with Forfrost, the God. And then you could do it with Altar of the Brood, which mills for every 1 permanent coming in. Say.
Yeah, or you could also play with Altar of Dementia, where you sacrifice and mill your opponent.
Yep.
There's a lot.
Or if you have haste, if you're playing in red and you have haste enabled, you just create a bunch of 4/4 flying angels that can swing for lethal.
Yeah, you can play Hammer of Purpheros.
Yep.
There's so many cards that allow you to synergize with this combo. since it's a two card combo. Mm. However, the challenge will be getting above 40 life, which is 47.
Yeah, true. Like,
because
I'm just thinking
your opponents will be attacking you a lot. You know that.
True. But at the same time, too, if you know how to talk your way out of getting damage, eh?
Yeah, true.
But you just told me something interesting about Speaker. And what was the combo for you? Like, you told me that it was in the current block.
Oh, no, not about Speaker, but another one. So there's this new spider and this new dragon in the car set 2020. The first dragon is called Terror of the Mount Velus. So it's 5 and 2 red. Not Terror of Mount Velus.
It is, give me a second, I'm trying to look for it too.
Terror of the Peaks.
Yes.
It's 3 and 2 red for a 5/4 flying dragon. And it says, spells your opponent's cast that targets Terror of the Peaks cost an additional 3 life to cast. Harder to remove if you have quite low life. And the third ability is, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target. So that card paired with two other cards.
Spore Weaver was?
I forgot what's the name.
Is this right?
Yeah, Spore Web Weaver. So Spore Web Weaver is 2 and a green, right?
Yes, 2 and a green.
2 and a green. Wait, let me.
So I'll just read it. Spore Web Weaver is a 2 and a green for a 1/4 spider. Has reach, hexproof, hexproof from blue. Whenever Spore Web Weaver is dealt damage, you gain 1 life and create a 1/1 green sporeling token creature.
Okay, yeah. So the combo goes like this. First, you make Spore Web Weaver indestructible by any means. In this case, let's say in the same set, so Hero Intervention. Second, you cast cast a creature with both Spore Web Weaver and Terror of the Peaks on the battlefield already. So when a creature is on the battlefield, Terror of the Peaks triggers and you do the combat damage the damage to the Spore Web Weaver. So the Spore Weaver gains you 1 life and creates a green sapling creature token because it has been dealt damage. And then since the sapling came in, Terror of the Peaks triggers again and makes and you do that damage to the Spore Web Weaver, making another sapling and gaining you another life. And Terror of the Peaks triggers again and you keep doing this loop again and again until you choose to ping someone else or maybe make a million saplings.
Yeah, true. And also, I just noticed that you can put in a Speaker of Heavens inside in a Naya deck. So you just tap it, Angel comes out, the dragon deals the damage to the spider pulls out, they start the loop there.
Yeah, true. So that's a combo where you need much, much preparation.
Yeah, it's just silly. But still, the combo itself is really interesting because it requires you to pull off a lot of cards because the dragon itself is a 5.
Yeah,
this...
but there is something called shared summons where you can find 2 different cards from your deck, creature cards from your deck, and put them to your hand.
Mm.
As long as they have different names, so you can use that. Find Spore Web Weaver, find Terror of the Peaks, put it into your hand, and you can just wait for when it's safe, no counter spells to cast it, and maybe just win on the spot.
True. And since you're in red, Hammer Phophoros, the Phophoros God himself.
Yep.
So basically, you have a lot of way to
win.
Win, yeah. Deal the damage via damage effect and so on. So it is a... Yeah, this... I'm saying that this set here is really interesting. Is there any damage enchantments in Core 21? Sorry, no, Core 20 in the previous set that could help with this combo?
Not that I can think of right now, but... I think in the history of Magic, there is, let's say, like Impact Tremors.
Yeah, Impact Tremors and so on. And I'm just thinking, like, is there anything in the current set from,
standard?
Let's just say, 20, Core Set 20 to 21?
I do not think so right now.
Yeah. But still, it is a good way to do stuff. And since Impact Tremors is a bit expensive, if I remember right, like... Impact Tremor for Phophoros are a bit expensive, but what do you call this?
You can use Goblin Bombardment.
True. Goblin Bombardment is one way too. You it is a red card for 1 and 2 red, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 1 and 2 red, you sacrifice a creature and you deal 1 damage to any target.
Yeah, yeah. But you have to sack a creature to deal the damage. Yes. Also, there's a lot of ways. The favorite is casting Altar of the Brood, where every time you, sorry, every time a permanent enters the battlefield,
you mill one, and every also player,
sorry, every opponent mills one.
Yeah, and you can also use Altar of Dementia.
True, true.
So it's the same as the Speaker of Heaven's combo, where you can you make infinite creature tokens and you use them for value.
True. Also, at the same time, too, if you're really creating 9,999 creatures, you can just swing them for lethal.
Yeah, true.
Like, there's no way that they can block unless somebody plays a Fog Effect card.
Or they cast a Subtle the Wreckage and you say bye-bye to your saplings.
Oh, yeah. But still, it's one of those... Wait, isn't that card where... It's a white instant, right? Where you cast it, bounce everything,
wrong.
Exile everything.
You exile all the creatures that are attacking.
Get lands, right?
Yes. Although you get lands, basic lands, you still don't... how do I say? You still don't get non-basics.
But still, it's not that bad. Like, if you get hit with that, you get a lot of your basic lands out, assuming that you have a lot of basic lands, and you can still repeat the combo later on. Like, on main phase 2, you can just do it again. Create a lot of creatures for protection and then pass the turn. I mean, the only way to get rid of them if they have something of a spell card that deals 1 damage to all. Yeah. Like, those are rare nowadays. Who really plays those kind of cards?
Well, anyways.
So, anyhow, yeah. Those are the combos of the day. I hope you enjoy those combos. So, let's move into the end phase and well, this section here is more of a loosey-goosey thing where we just talk about what we've done in our week. So for me, it's basically, well, I have a lot of magic cards on the side. I'm just putting them in my binder. And with the new set that came out, I have a lot of singles that I really need to arrange. In all honesty, this shouldn't be about magic, but that's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
What about you?
I made a new Gadra deck. Gadget, the Crown Scourge. It's an artifact-based deck, so I'm quite excited to bust it out tomorrow when we have our get-together.
All right. Honestly, for me, this week, in actuality, I might go see a movie because today, we're doing recording, is what, July 1st. The Malaysian government said that, yes, we can go to the
cinemas
and watch movies, but with social distancing in mind and whatnot. But yeah, I might go because Digimon Adventure, whatever it is out, so I might go and watch that, probably. Okay. So yeah.
Yeah, hopefully my weekend will not be just my homework. But I will be playing Magic at Alexandria Bookstore, mostly. Mm-hmm. I'll be drafting this Friday, and I will be hosting my own D&D session on Saturdays as well.
Oh, true, true. So you have a busy week ahead of you.
Yeah.
So anyway,
and I have so much homework.
You need to finish that homework. So anyway, yes, let's wrap it up. So we have to give a big thank you to Alexandria Bookstore for hosting us here.
And we have to thank the shopkeeper, Adam, for allowing us to host this
episode
in his shop. So I think that's all we have to say.
Yeah, true. If you do live in the Johor Bahru area, do come and visit because the store is amazing. It has a lot of products from Gundams to books to Warhammers and whatnot. And also there's a lot of Magic the Gathering stuff, so do come and visit. There's a lot of players here and they're willing to play with you.
And you can drop by from KL, you can drop by from Penang, you can drop by from Singapore when the borders is released. You can come here, you can relax as well. Although you can also play Magic with your friends here. And I would say come stay here if you can. Alexandria is the leading Magic the Gathering store in Johor Bahru, and you can't find any other place which is better than this.
True, the community is huge here. There's a lot of senior players, there are a lot of experienced players, and they are willing to help. Like, they're willing to trade cards, sell cards, buy cards. So the place here is really awesome.
Yeah, and we're all friendly. So come on, find us. You can just look for other players. Don't just look for us.
Yes. Anyway, with that, we'll have to say goodbyes.
Yeah.
I'll see you next week with another fun episode of the Gatewatch.
Yeah. And be sure to like and subscribe and leave a comment down below on what you want to see. And yeah, that's all. Thank you. All
right. 3, 2, 1, and.